Chapter 2, The Prospectus. By the following morning, a little sanity had returned to the Elliot household, and although David had not dared leave the safety of his bedroom yet, his parents were sitting down at the breakfast table, almost as if nothing had happened. "Are you feeling better today, my little ball of nuts, oats, dried fruit and whole wheat flakes?" Mrs. Elliot inquired tenderly.
"We are not amused, Lee,"
Mr. Elliot replied, helping himself to some.
"How was the stab wound, my dear?"
"Not too painful, thank you, my love." They ate their cereal in silence. As usual, Mr. Elliot read the Financial Times from cover to cover, clicking his teeth, sniffing and occasionally giggling as he found out which of his clients had gone bankrupt that day. On the other side of the table, Mrs. Elliot, in a bright pink dressing gown with matching hair curls, hid behind the Daily Mail and slipped a little vodka into her cereal bowl. She liked her breakfast with schnapps, crackle and pop. It was only when they had begun their boiled egg up that they had remembered David. Mr. Elliot had just bashed his egg with a teaspoon, when his eyes glazed over and his moustache quivered.
"David!"
he snarled. "Do you want me to call him?" Mrs. Elliot asked.
"What are we going to do with him?"
Mr. Elliot hammered at the egg again, too hard this time. The egg exploded, showering his wife with shell. With a loud sigh, he threw down the spoon and tapped the Financial Times.
"I always hoped he would follow me into banking," he said. "That's why I bought him a pocket calculator when he was 7 and a briefcase when he was 8. Every Christmas now for 10 years, I'll be taking him to the stock market as a special treat."
"What thanks have I got for it, eh?" "Expelled!"
Mr. Elliot grabbed hold of the Financial Times and tore it into a dozen pieces.
"Washed up! Finished!"
Just then, there was a clatter from the hallway as the post arrived. Mrs. Elliot got up and went to see what had arrived, but her husband went on talking anyway.
"If only I could find a school that could lick him into shape," he muttered. "Not one of these namby-pamby modern places, but somewhere that still believes in discipline."
"When I was young, I knew what discipline meant. These days, most children can't even spell it. Whip, 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 that's what they need. A good bit of bamboo on their bums."
Mrs. Elliot walked back into the breakfast table, holding the usual bundle of bills and also a large brown envelope. "Bruce Grange," she said in a puzzled voice.
"What?"
"That's what it says here." She held out the brown envelope. "It's postmarked Norfolk." Mr. Elliot snatched up a knife and Mrs. Elliot dived behind the table, believing he was going to use it on her again. Instead, he slit open the envelope before pulling out the contents.
"Strange," he muttered.
"What is it, my dearest?" Mrs. Elliot asked nervously over the edge of the table.
"It's a prospectus for a boys' school."
Mr. Elliot wheeled himself close to the window where the sun was streaming in.
"But how could anyone know that we'd be looking for a new school for David?"
"Perhaps Beaton College have told them," his wife suggested.
"I suppose so."
Mr. Elliot opened the prospectus and a letter slid out. He unfolded it and read out loud.
"Dear Mr. Elliot, have you ever wondered where you could find a school that could lick your son into shape? Not one of those namby-pamby modern places, but somewhere that still believes in discipline. And has it ever worried you these days that most children can't even spell discipline?"
Mr. Elliot lowered the letter.
"Good heavens!" he said. "That's remarkable!"
"What is?" Mrs. Elliot asked.
"I was exactly saying the same thing a moment ago, almost word for word."
"Go on." Mr. Elliot picked up the letter.
"Then allow us to introduce you to Gruson Grange. As you shall see from the enclosed prospectus, we are a full boarding school and provide a unique environment for children aged 12 to 16 who have proved themselves unsuited to modern teaching methods. and Gravesend Grange is situated on its own island off the coast of Norfolk. There is no regular ferry service to the island, so there are no regular holidays. In fact, pupils are permitted to one day's holiday a year. Parents are never invited to the school except in special circumstances and only if they can swim. I feel confident that your son will benefit from the excellent facilities and high teaching standards of Gravesend Grange. I look forward to hearing from you in the next half an hour. Yours sincerely, John Kilgore, Assistant Headmaster.
Half an hour? Mrs. Elliot said. That doesn't give us a very long to make up our minds.
Mine's already made up, Mr. Elliot snapped.
Only one day's holiday a year?
That's a sound idea if I ever heard one.
He flicked through the prospectus, which curiously contained no photographs and was written in red ink on some sort of parchment.
Listen to this. This is everything, with a special emphasis on chemistry, ancient history, and religious studies. They have two language laboratories, a computer room, a fully equipped gymnasium, and they're the only private school in the country with their own cemetery.
He tapped the page excitedly.
They have class in drama,
music, cookery, model making, and they've even got a class in astronomy.
What would they want to have a class in a monastery for? Mrs. Elliot asked.
I said astronomy, the study of stars, you ridiculous woman.
Mr. Elliot rolled up the prospectus and hit her with it.
This is the best thing that's happened all week, he went on.
Get me a telephone.
There was a number at the bottom of the letter, and Mr. Elliot dialed it. There was a hiss, then a series of clicks.
Mrs. Elliot sighed. Her husband always hissed and clicked when he was excited. When he was in a really good mood, he'd also whistle through his nose.
Hello, he said once the connection had been made.
Can I speak to John Kilgore? This is Mr. Kilgore speaking.
The voice was soft, almost a whisper.
I take it this is Mr. Elliot.
Yes it is.
You're absolutely right.
Mr. Elliot was amazed.
I got your prospectus this morning. And have you come to a decision?
Absolutely. I was to enrol my son as soon as possible. Between you and me, Mr. Kilgore, David is a great disappointment to me, a massive disappointment. For many years, I hoped he would follow in my footsteps, or at least in my wheelchair tracks, as I can't walk. But although he's almost 13, he seems totally uninteresting in merchant banking.
Don't worry, Mr. Elliot.
The voice at the other end seemed to be devoid of emotion. After a few terms at Gravesend Grange, I'm sure you'll find he's quite a different person.
When can he start?
How about today?
Today? Mrs. Elliot was craning her neck to listen to the receiver. Mr. Elliot swung at her, clutching her behind the ear.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kilgore, he said as she went flying. That was just my wife's head.
Did you say today?
Yes, there's a train leaving Liverpool Street for King's Lynn at 1 o'clock this afternoon. There'll be 200 pupils on it, and David could travel with them.
That's wonderful.
Do you want me to come too?
Oh, no, Mr. Elliot. The assistant headmaster chuckled. Oh, we don't encourage parents here at Gravesend Grange. We find our pupils respond more quickly if they are completely removed from home and family. Of course, if you really want to make the long and tedious journey...
No!
I'll just put him through a taxi to the station. On second thought, make that a bus.
Then we'll be looking forward to seeing him this evening.
And goodbye, Mr. Elliot. The phone went dead.
They've accepted him.
Mrs. Elliot crowed. Mrs. Elliot held the telephone up and he slammed the receiver down, accidentally crushing three of her fingers. Just then, a door opened and David came in, now just wearing a t-shirt and jeans. Nervously, he took his place at the table and reached out for the cereal packet. At the same time, his father rocketed towards him and snatched it away, sending muesli in a shower over his shoulder. Mrs. Elliot had meanwhile plunged her swollen fingers into the milk. David sighed. It looked as if he was going to have to give breakfast to Miss.
You don't have time to eat, Mr. Elliot declared. You've got to go upstairs and pack.
Where am I going? David asked.
You're going to a wonderful school that I found for you. A perfect school.
A glorious school.
But it's the end of term. The terms never end, his father replied. That's what's so glorious about it. Pack your mother and kiss your clothes goodbye.
No, no!
He banged his head against the table. Kiss your mother and pack your clothes.
Your train leaves at once. David stared at his mother, who had begun to cry once again. Though whether it was because he was leaving, because of the pain in her fingers, or just because she had somehow managed to get her hand jammed in the milk jug, he could not say. There was obviously no point in arguing. The last time he tried arguing, his father had locked him in his bedroom and nailed up the door. It had taken two carpenters and the fire brigade a week to get it open again. Silently, he got up and walked out of the room. It didn't take him long to pack. He had no uniform for the new school and no idea what books to take. He was neither happy or particularly sad. After all, his father already cancelled Christmas. Whatever the school was like, it would hardly be worse than We're Not Amused. But as he was folding his clothes, he felt something strange. He was being watched. He was sure of it. Closing his case, he walked over to the window and looked out. His bedroom had a view over the garden, which was entirely plastic, as his mother was allergic to flowers. And there, standing in the middle of the plastic lawn, he saw it. It was a crow, or perhaps a raven. Whatever it is, it was the biggest bird he had ever seen. Pitch black, feathers hanging off it like a tattered cloak, and was staring up the bedroom, its glistening eyes fixed on him. David reached down to open the window. At the same moment, the bird uttered a ghastly, gurgling croak and launched itself into the air. David watched it fly away over the rooftops. Then he turned back and got ready to leave. A few minutes longer this week. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you really think you have a story that should be read here, then tell us. I just want to say now, want to declare now, that the next book I shall be reading after I have finished Gruesome Grange shall be Lynn Reed Banks's classic, The Indian in the Cupboard. Now, I know some of you might come up to me and say, oh, why aren't you doing the voices like they are in the film? I've never seen the... I've not seen the film since I was about 7. Okay, it's... So, I haven't seen it for 6 years. And, well, I can't remember all the voices. And they were American, and the book is set in England. So I'm going to do, actually, believe it or not, Bristol voices. Yeah, Bristol, and some, and a few Northern voices. So, that will be it until next week. This is your second episode this week. In fact, the last episode I did was yesterday. So, lucky you. Might as well change it to be weekly. Daily instead of weekly. You know what I might do? In fact, every 2 days at the least, okay? I'll try and do it as much as I can. Oh, thinking now it's a bad decision. I'll do it as much as I can, okay? It won't be once a month, like some podcasts do. So, I'll see you soon. See you when I tell you about... Well, not tell you about... I read to you the next chapter, which is Travelling Companions. I'll see you then. Also, don't forget to go to Operation Sudan and Save Darfur. OperationSudan.org, SaveDarfur.org. They are both designed to stop the genocide in Sudan, which is obviously horrible and So please, please give generously. I know on Save Darfur they have a Dollars for Darfur thing. In England that's 75p, I think now. Yeah, 75p. Yeah. So, please give to that cause. So I shall see you next time. Probably tomorrow. In fact, might do it today. See you soon. Bye-bye.